Let me now turn to our second speaker, Kurt Malchoy, who is currently the Secretary for Natural Resources and coordinates coordinates and implements the California state-level climate adaptation strategy. Prior efforts included assessing restoration project performance assessments for both Sacramento and San Joaquin River Delta, managing grant review and funding for multi-objective flood control and watershed restoration projects, monitoring ecological succession for wetland restoration projects, and collecting riparian habitat diversity data for other areas in California. So he has a wide range of background and is going to share with you a lot of the experience that California has had in climate adaptation planning. So, Kurt, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Catherine. And I'd like to just start off just by following up an excellent point that Terry just made about how there is such variability that are dependent on local situations with frameworks. And I'd like to just offer our adaptation strategy as an example that will hopefully give perspective. The strategy that we put out was, it's been out for a little over a year right now, so this is just a little fact sheet on it. The political support that we had was through an executive order, as seen in one of Terry's spreadsheets. We released it about a year and a month later in December 2nd, 2009. We've since released a progress report just to monitor what we've been doing, focusing on our some of our key strategies. And we plan to have biannual updates. This is an iterative process, as they all are. We're not sure what kind of support we're going to get for that, but that's what we're going to be working on with the new governorship coming in. So I just like to step back a little bit and just talk about our process when we were beginning, what frameworks we were developing. As with any endeavor that is far-reaching, we had challenges with finding out where to start. We began by holding two key breakout meetings. One was with the executive staff of those agencies that were managing resources that were affected by climate change and that we wanted to garner their focus and input on, and one with the researchers that were involved with the downscale climate research that was being done by this time for about 7 years for California. We were fortunate in having a good research background from the California Energy Commission. They've been managing what's called the Public Interest Energy Research Program that was taking six or so downscaled IPCC global conceptual models and applying them to the unique characteristics of California. So we met with the scientists as well, and the reason we did this is because from the agencies we needed their participation, ongoing participation, and from the scientists we needed their insight and guidance. We then formed working groups that were organized into sectors, and Terry had a nice layout on those, and just to review that, we broke it down into oceans and coastal resources, water supply, energy and transportation infrastructure, public health, biodiversity, agriculture and forestry resources. And we wanted to use this as a forum for assuring the continued and collaborative participation from the agencies. This is where the executive order was very helpful. And they also had a vested interest because they're responsible for resource areas that could be harmed by climate impacts. And what we wanted to do with the adaptation strategy is that previously the research was telling us of the degree of changes, sea level rise and temperature and precipitation. What we wanted to go further in was just describing what that meant in actual impacts statewide. So we needed help synthesizing the research into impacts, so we hired a consultant team to help do that. And then from there, we chose to organize the strategy into two basic categories from the standpoint of actions we could or could not take at the time, near and long term. We did this to provide an impetus for starting the process now and to build momentum, at the same time providing a roadmap for how to continue in longer term, of course, under feedback from ongoing research efforts.
Kurt, I'm getting a message that people are having a little difficulty hearing you. So if you could speak up a little louder, that might help.
Okay. I'm on a mobile phone here. Not a mobile phone, but just on a headpiece. So I moved a little bit closer. Is that better?
Yes, it is. Thanks.
Okay, great. For the last bullet, we developed a review process for each major stage of the strategy. We did this because we needed the benefits that an open process provides, such as increasing awareness through our process, expertise, and, of course, getting support. This next slide is very oversimplified, but it was real in terms of some perceptions of adaptation that we ran into when we began our process. The first one, adversity, just let me step back a little bit. To preface this, in the past, the mere mention of climate adaptation was not always well received, at least as well as mitigation. It was a little harder to grasp, and it was a little more confusing to understand. And this was mostly during earlier efforts. May or may not run into this now. But with adversity, this I learned from colleagues. I've been working on this topic for 3 years now. I learned from colleagues that were working on this for at least a decade or so. Adaptation was often viewed as a way to acknowledge impacts without having to attribute them to greenhouse gas emissions, but that began to fade as more science came in showing the prevalence of impacts. Then around the time we started putting together the strategy, we did run into colleagues that showed or that feared that if we adapted to climate impacts, there would be a reason not to mitigate. We would artificially maintain an unsustainable status quo for emissions. But after a while, research came in, most notably by this graph. This was put together through one of the peer assessment reports, is that climate change is going to persist, or climate impacts are going to persist no matter what the emission scenario is going to be. This shows sea level rise. And in the solid box that I have here, it shows a pretty tight grouping of all of the scenarios. It only begins to dichotomize as you go out and it projects into the end of the century. But no matter what scenario, even in the best, even if we – graphs like this show that even if we could miraculously completely curtail emissions, we would still have impacts. Also, we were starting to get a taste of what it was like to have a reactive relationship to more intense issues through climate change. We've had an unprecedented heat wave in 2006. This is part of the entire North American heat wave. It killed at least 160 people in California alone. We do have a gauge at the Golden Gate showing the 7 inches of sea level rise that is shown by this portion of the graph. And also we have spent in 2 consecutive years over $500 million fighting unprecedented forest fires at a time when we just do not have the budgets to accommodate that. Also, we had the benefit. These are some publications that came out a little bit before, and the one on the right, The Futures Now, came out just during when we were starting our adaptation planning process. Researchers and agency staff were beginning to produce documents that were summarizing the research and providing a good background explanations of what the research means. To explain it a little more simply, we borrowed heavily from The Futures Now because that makes a thesis that we are experiencing climate impacts and it's projected to get worse. So we borrowed on this to put together the messages for the messaging that we were going to provide in our adaptation strategy. So by this time, we were able to put together, we're more clear on what key points we wanted to make in the strategy, and they're summarized here that climate change impacts were already occurring and they're projected to be to get worse. We borrowed a key statistic from a study that was put out by UC Berkeley and an organization called Next 10 that studies economic issues in California. They projected out of the $4 trillion total of California infrastructure, 2.5 of that is projected to be at more risk through climate impacts. We also wanted to talk about how we have an opportunity to reduce these risks and build our resilience if we act now. And we already have regulations, the California Environmental Quality Act, that make us put into consideration any impact on a project before considering that project. That includes conditions exacerbated by climate change. So with these points, we were then we had a better sense of how to structure the adaptation strategy. We opened up with the chapter defining the climate impact problem to the state and identifying the adaptation component, talking about how it's important, it's co-equal and necessary with mitigation to address climate change. We had a chapter synthesizing the peer research into climate impacts. We based those on the same emission scenarios that IPCC uses, with A1 being the highest emission scenario, B1 or 2 being the lowest. And then from there, we make key recommendations. We provide those in our executive summary, and that's just to give a sense of overall direction for how we're going to start the process of adapting. And then the rest of the 100 pages of the strategy consists of those chapters broken down by sector, where they go through the same process as those four top bullets, but they break them down into their sector resources areas. So in a nutshell, we wanted to focus on the science that we had so far. What are the impacts statewide at this time from the science? What overall strategy we can have? And we also wanted to have some actions. Terry was talking about during the Q&A session, no-regret strategies, get as close as we can to that so we can begin engaging where we could. For funding, we basically took whatever we could. We begged, borrowed, and stole, really. Most of our resources were from existing agencies. This is basically, at this time, all we had time and resources for was to make a state plan primarily from state agencies, but we did receive input from other sectors through our public stakeholder process. But we borrowed heavily from other agencies, specifically in those sector resource areas, from their time. They either were above and beyond their existing responsibilities or they changed their responsibilities. For example, my position is borrowed from another agency, and I work in person with Natural Resources Agency on this issue. But we did receive, to hire our consulting team, a $150,000 allocation from the money for AB 32. AB 32 is the mitigation legislation for the state. They realized how important our information was for their process. They understand how intertied our processes are, so they did give us some funding. And then we took resources from other agencies wherever we could. For example, our Energy Commission has excellent IT staff. They host our website. Department of Water Resources has their own in-house publication office. They proofed and printed all of our copies. And wherever we can get a local agency or state agency, for example, with a hearing room and associated IT staff, we use that as well. So it's been a little over a year since we released the strategy. We spent most of our time and energy making the research findings relevant. We're using four basic tools. One is a vulnerability study. This is the same peer research team that has been working for the past 8 or so years. They're going to look at, they're picking up from our adaptation strategy where we describe statewide strategies. They're drilling down to regional areas. There's a study on Los Angeles area, Bay Area with sea level rise issues, Central Valley with weather and extreme heat. And also for the policy guide, the next item there, we're teaming up with the California Emergency Management Agency. They have an interest in statewide planning at the local level to minimize emergencies that are exacerbated by climate impacts. So we're plugging into that, and we're going to work together to put together a procedural document that gives some general guidance, but malleable as per the individual conditions of the community on how to begin addressing climate change. We're also working with Google.org and UC Berkeley to put together what we're calling a CalAdapt tool. It's where you can go on the web and use an interface where you put in geospecific information, such as an address or a landmark, and it will provide several key pieces of information. One is what are the expected impacts, two, a description of what those impacts could entail, three is linkages to the resource that begot the information on those impacts. And finally, we're contracting with the National Academy of Sciences to develop a regional sea level rise study. We're working with the states, the other western coastal states, Oregon and Washington, as well as federal agencies, convening the National Academy of Sciences on a sea level rise study that puts into more account the polar ice cap melting and geotectonic influences on the state to, again, drill down to the regional level. This all for us is very valuable in providing the tools that local communities need to begin planning, because that's where most of the work is done. We're coordinating climate adaptation mitigation mostly through agencies such as California Environmental Protection Agency that's tasked with implementing the climate mitigation legislation and their program, their associated programs. We were sitting down with them over the last year, just making sure that mitigation actions benefit and don't conflict with our adaptation strategies and vice versa. We tried to minimize any surprises by having them engaged in our working group sessions when we're drafting our strategy, but we've continued that process. And we're also involved in regional efforts. For example, we're working with the Western Governors Association on how to get Western states and their common resource issues on board to address climate change. The Governor Schwarzenegger had his third annual regional climate mitigation effort. It's his Global Climate Summit. For the first time, he had an adaptation segment to it, and which we released our next bulleted item down there. We released a first-year progress report. We wanted to do that before the governor's last term, as this is done under his support. We also wanted to just assess the key recommendations that we put out in the executive summary. And then finally, funding. We spent a lot of time this last year getting the contracting done for the four items that I mentioned in the first bullet. So now that we have a plan, we're, of course, looking at how to, where necessary, habituate adaptation into our organizational plans and activities. When engaging agencies that are planning for adaptation, in discussion, a lot of times we inform them that many times adaptation is looking at existing procedures for which our organizational structures are already set up, but with a different perspective. It's not an add-on, as many have perceived, or a diversion from what they have to plan for in their general processes. Agencies at all levels usually have some kind of planning or visioning document that they regularly review that affects all future activities. We've explained how these can be updated and adjusted with climate impacts in mind, and that's being done to quite a bit of extent. We, for example, our Department of Fish and Game, they have a wildlife action plan. Water Resources, our Department of Water Resources, in their water plan, they're addressing climate adaptation before we were. So lots of existing resources out there. Stimulus funding, we were able to provide through an organization called the Strategic Growth Council. This council was set in place through state legislation, and they are tasked with coordinating statewide activities that improve conditions such as public health, infrastructure, and natural resources in the face of the expected population growth that California is going to experience. The council wasn't set up per se to implement climate adaptation, but over last year we were meeting with them and convincing them that climate adaptation should be a key component to their work. And this year they awarded about $23 million in grant funding for local planning, specifically to local plans that seek more sustainable means in forms of transportation, park resources, other aspects. This was very important for us to set the institutional foundation on how the state can better adapt. This is important in that it's this is at the level where most of the actual work is done. And my next bullet down there, vertical integration, that's kind of a bureaucratic buzzword. Agencies, right now, I just wanted to explain how agencies are getting better and better at planning with other processes in mind. Cities and counties are following regional planning, and regional planning are looking more at state and federal informational resources, as well as being aware of funding sources, which leads us to the next bullet. That feeds into our need to provide that information, the vulnerability assessment information that gives local communities the information that they need to know about to address the impact at their levels. For years, we've been emphasizing watershed level management. It's been a stalled effort here, but it's effective in grouping climate impacts into manageable geographic units. We're trying to encourage watershed level plans. We do have a lot of counties that have what's called coordinated resource management plans. If that can feed into local planning processes and it facilitates that, we recommend that. And for legislation, I'm not sure what approach to take on this yet, but it's going to be more and more prevalent. At a hearing last year, we were asked by a state legislative committee on how to operationalize adaptation and what the possibilities of doing that through legislation. I had no answer at the time because we were just developing our strategy, and we had the concern that adaptation through statute cannot accurately reflect the individualized nature of the problem, especially at the regional and local planning levels. But that could change, and we intend to remain in contact with our state legislature. Perhaps they can do some more generalized things, such as allocate funding. And I probably went a little bit over my time, but hopefully there is. I'd be happy to address any questions that you have.
Thanks. We do have quite a few, and you've highlighted a lot of the public-private partnerships that have enabled you to accomplish a lot more. Some of the questions are regarding some of the tools you mentioned, specifically your partnership with Google and the tools that you mentioned that Google was developing. Is that going to be available for other states, and do you know if they're planning to expand that?
Anyone could access it. It will be on the public domain this coming spring. We hope to have that. We plan to have that populated with temperature and precipitation data, so they can work on those two. And then we're going to add sea level rise as the National Academy of Sciences study comes in. Right now, it is confined to geographical areas in California because it's feeding off of the state level research. But we would be happy to engage in making that a more widespread tool, especially if it shows demonstrated efficacy in planning efforts. That is what we're depending on for, say, if you're a planner for a city or county government level planner, and you're asked to put together a proposal for inculcating adaptation into your existing plans. With an afternoon's research with this tool, you'd be able to put together, you get a good sense of idea of what impacts are felt. You tie that in with what resources you have in your area, and in a short amount of time, you can have a pretty good assessment of what's going to happen, and you can have that based on the research that we've been working on for about a decade now.
Thanks. I want to be sure we have enough time for Michaela to both cover her points and answer some questions, so I'm just going to ask you one more. Both you and Terry mentioned the importance of integrating adaptation planning and mitigation planning, making sure that it is not conflicting. Wondered if you could talk a little bit about ways that they may conflict. What are some examples of that?
The best example I can have when we were discussing this is how this is a very distilled version of how you could have maladaptation with a mitigation measure. Say you have a heat wave, an adaptation measure is turning on your air conditioner. That's not a good mitigation strategy because that basically is using energy resources that this time uses resources that emit carbon into the atmosphere. Likewise, a co-adaptive measure for that same impact would be to plant a lot of urban trees. So you'd have not only the cooling, but you'd have the carbon sequestration. So it's just going through and ferreting out those mitigation and adaptation strategies together just to make sure that they are beneficial. From our experience, the majority of the time, they have been co-beneficial. But we just want to make sure.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot, Kurt. And I'm hoping we can get back to some of the other questions that are coming in for you at the end.